If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we review a bunch of books that have come out this week. And once again, another big week at the old comic book shop. So let's not waste any time. Kick it off with a huge honker, as I like to call him.
Yep, that's what we call comic books we like.
Absolute Batman number 15 from DC Comics. This is written by Scott Snyder, art by Jock. And I think it's fair to say, even though there's a lot of comics that came out this year, this is one of the most hyped issues in a very long time, because we are finally getting to meet in full the Absolute Joker. This is kind of asterisk an origin story for the character, and I say asterisk because the way they lay it out here is Alfred Pennyworth is telling the story of the Joker to Batman in narration, but it takes a little bit of inspiration from The Killing Joke, because we get a origin for the Joker that seems reasonable, and then Batman pushes him on it and is like, well, but what do you think? And he's like, okay, here's the evidence that I've assembled. And he's like, but really, what do you think? So like we got in The Killing Joke, where we got three different origins for the Joker, and any of them could be right, but probably all of them are wrong. Same thing here. They're pushing this Absolute Joker into a mythic level, but with the added bonus of something that Scott Snyder's been very open with for a very long time now, but gets very explicit about on this issue, this Joker is essentially what we think of as Bruce Wayne, but for the Absolute Universe, down to having a butler, down to having a mansion, down to having a cave hiding behind his clock in his study, all of that stuff. So I thought absolutely wild issue that paid off on the promise with some truly fantastic art in a way that I haven't seen from Jock before, particularly because he's repeating the story almost beat for beat with the panel structure, but exaggerating it and making more horrific each time. So really great stuff. I know that was me monologuing for a while, but what did you guys think of the book?
Well, just going off what you said, like I feel like the art is it makes Batman sort of the other character in here, and it really is the Joker story. Like, Batman is only in shadow; you never see his face. He's only in the uniform. Like, and while the Joker character we really get to know, and the fact that it's told in sort of three corrective steps, where you hear the story, you hear corrections to the story, and then deeper corrections to that, I thought really actually makes you drills this, it puts it very hard in your head, which I think is cool. Scott Snyder has been pushing this sort of immortal Joker or infinite Joker for quite a while. Like, in main continuity, this was sort of established in his run as well. For that, and it never quite, I never believed it in main continuity, but here I'm like, yes, of course, like, it's great. And but my favorite part is the last couple pages, where we get this Joker being Bruce Wayne just straight to the bone. Like, that's a masterstroke to me.
Holy fucking shit, this cover melted my fucking world. I could not believe what I was looking at, because, like, okay.
You're like, absolute, put on some pants, buddy, right?
No, absolutely.
Naked Joker.
Absolute Bane was like, holy shit. Like, how is Batman going to win? He's Jack, but he's not Bane Jack. So I was like, oh, man, this is crazy. And then when I saw this, I was like, oh, I don't know. How is the, like, Joker's in a beast mode situation and is like part devil. I was like, this is insane. But then when we get the story and it's like he has a butler, and I was just a little bit, I feel like this image melted my brain, and then I wasn't able to handle an actual story, because like my mind was like so blown with the image of what this Joker is, but that's not what's in here. So that was a little tough, but man, I am
and
so
excited. You trust anyone with a butler. That's what you said, right?
No. Because
I feel like that's you do any love Alfred Butlers. You love Butlers, and I feel like you're like
Alfred, and I feel like Jarvis, I have respect for the
like
Butlers.
Jarvis. You like Jarvis.
Sure, all right, fine. I like Butlers. But whatever, I just hold on.
There's Daredevil's Butler, right? Foggy
Nelson.
How dare you? How dare you? Stop trying
Would
to
Would you like some
me.
Little sandwiches, Mr. Murdock?
Stop it. Also, that's funny because John Favreau played, Foggy. Also, he did this line in the tennis movie where he had the cucumber sandwiches bit. So my mind kind of crossed there when you did that. Anyways... Once my mind is done being melted by this image, I'll be excited to be able to kind of read the next issue because I was in shock and awe of this.
This cover really messed you up?
Yeah.
Because just how demonic it is.
Yeah, because I thought this is going to be a pure evil Joker that is a demon, not like, you know, this Batman version. Like, how is he going to fucking fight a demon Joker? We're fucked. But then it's like, oh, he's not. And I was like, oh, what the fuck? You know what I mean?
Maybe Batman just won't do it. He'll just bail.
Well, let's talk about this character a little bit, because I thought this was an interesting take, and I am curious to see how this spins out, because something that Scott Snyder has discussed is how in the normal universe, Batman is order and Joker is chaos.
Right.
So he flipped it for the absolute universe. So this absolute Batman is chaos. He's the one who's breaking the system, throwing a wrench in the gears. And Joker's whole thing, we've definitely seen this so far, at least in his human guise, is order. He's the one holding things together. What I think we get here, because we get to see him go to these islands that he has, where he's basically sent people who have given him grievances over the years for decades, and then he hunts one of these guys in dragon form, this is him letting that order go and becoming chaos for a little bit, but I'm not quite sure what that does to the metaphor necessarily.
Oh, I disagree. I think it's more like this is his treat for keeping everything in order, and he's setting the order by doing it this way. And it's sort of the ancient order of kill or be killed, the most primal order, is he hunts for sport his enemy when he's ready. So to me, it's like a little treat or a compulsion that he has. But I love the way this is told. And the flip from what you said in the past, a story told that feels, I think we'll look back on this time in our real lives as like, oh, in the last decade, it went from being like the order made sense to like the order is chaotic and we don't know. And I think this change in the storytelling that Scott Snyder has pushed is a reflection of that. Not only because this is set in a universe that Darkseid, evil, is the primal force, but also I think our world is different and the systems that are meant to hold us up feel like they're threatening us more in our regular lives. And this change to Joker, I think, is a reflection of that.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And the one other thing that I thought was very neat that I'll throw out there is this Joker has very clear notes of being a bat. Like, he's a dragon, but he has leathery wings. He's got the pokey up ears at the top. So they're really, really pushing this hard. And I'm pretty psyched to see them go head to head and see how that plays out, because this definitely feels like Scott Snyder. This is the thing that he's been leading to all along. So I'm excited to see.
I just wonder if
up.
It's going to be one of those things where Batman ends up on Joker Island and then gets kind of hunted, you know?
See, I think, does Batman have to take a stand-up comedy class?
Oh, so
he can be the Joker, stand-up comic?
He needs to become the Joker.
You mean like a clown class or something?
Yeah, he's going to be like, when I come out, introduce me as Joker, and Joker's be like, I'm Joker. What? Huh?
It's going to be a trademark argument.
Oh, boy. That will be fun. Why don't we move on to another big issue this week, Ultimate Spider-Man number 23 from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Marco Cicchetto and David Messina. This is the penultimate issue of Penultimate Spider-Man, as we see Spider-Man fighting the Kingpin as he is on the cover. Everybody's in a lot of danger except for Uncle Ben and J. Jonah Jameson, who are doing the Ultimate Universe's favorite activity, releasing a video so the entire world can see the truth. Great to see that 2 months in a row. Last month, the Ultimates, and now here again. I have to imagine living in the Ultimate Universe. You're like, oh boy, more secrets. Here we go.
Well, part of it, how Ultimate is, how just the great the Wi-Fi is. Everything's really connected.
Yes.
Really oh, great. Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, maybe I'm debating this too strong. Like, this title is always good, but I felt a little let down by this issue, given that it's the second to last issue. Like, there's some good scenes in it. Great art, as always, from Marco Cicchetto and David Messina.
Yeah.
But that, frankly, I mean, maybe it's just a fault of publishing, but that the big move in this issue was releasing a video, the same thing they did in Ultimates, and then Spider-Man is just fighting the Kingpin, something that we've seen a lot in the mainline universe. It wasn't, I've been like left screaming almost every single issue so far. This one did not, so it felt like a little bit of a step down.
I think eventually sort of all the chickens have to come home to roost, and I think this series has taken its time and really let a lot of stuff cook slowly on the back burners. So, like, I think by that very nature, like, then the climax has to, it can't be too complicated because there's already just so many elements at play. Mm-hmm. So it has to be, I think, in the case of this issue, a sort of pretty straightforward and simple story. I did like a lot of the moves here, though. Like, there's a betrayal by the Green Goblin, which I thought was really well done and very fitting. The Mr. Negative Kingpin stuff felt a little like, honestly, it reminded me of the Imperial crossover where I was like, feels complicated and it not fun with a sort of like just mild ending. Like, I wanted it to be a big thing, but they sort of like, Mr. Negative was like, you know what? I'm going to get out of here. Good luck. And just walks off. So I was like, oh, okay. But because the rest of the characters have so much going on. I like the Mysterio presentation of that character that's here, which has been a wild and interesting interpretation. And I really like Peter Parker's son and what's going on with him.
Yeah, I agree. This is fun. Cool cover. My favorite panel is the beginning where it says Peter Parker and then Mary Jane Watson Parker. And I'm like, oh, that's just awesome. Oh, man, I just want to stay in there forever. But, yeah, I love the art. Liked all the fun action sequences. Felt very Ultimate and cool to me.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how this ties up next issue, because to be clear, there's a lot of stuff that I really liked here. I love the moves that they're making with Dr. Octopus, Otto Octavius. He's not Dr. Octopus yet. He's the Superior Spider-Man. That's a really interesting character. The relationship between Ben Parker, no, Richard. Richard Parker, the son, and the Black Cat is really interesting as well. That's a lot of fun to watch. In fact, if anything, maybe the least fun part of this is Peter Parker in this comic book.
Well, he's become the most normcore mainline universe Peter Parker. Like, he's just doing the stuff Spider-Man does.
Yeah. So, I'm curious to see what the conclusion is next issue, because this isn't a bad issue by any means in my estimation, but a lot of that is going to depend on how this all shakes out. So we'll see.
Well, and it's also they've established so many good active relationships that it's crazy to me that this is just ending next issue and bye-bye.
Yeah, it is right? Weird. Oh, also, I really like the Gwen Stacy being five Mysterios in one. That's pretty creepy and fun as well.
Yeah, so, it's very cool.
Very curious. Next up, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 13 from IDW, written by Gene Luen Yang, art by Freddie E. Williams II. This is picking up after the lauded run from Jason Aaron, which finished last issue. Now the Turtles are back in action. What are you doing, Pete? Are you singing the turtle theme? Or?
That's right, yeah. Just in the background while you're talking. You know,
beautiful.
Yeah, it was gorgeous.
It's a little underscore.
Yeah. The Turtles are back in the good graces of New York City and each other. They're friends again. They're brothers again. They are fighting the good fight. Everybody loves them. And enter two new enemies. One is called Papa Bang. Is that what it is?
Papa Bang.
Papa Bang is a big yak who punches hard. Yeah. And the other one is a mysterious enemy called Ujigami. And I should have mentioned this several titles ago, but mass spoiler warning for everything that we're talking about in the stack here. But we're also picking up on the big cliffhanger from Jason Aaron's run, which is that Splinter is back alive. How is he alive? What happens next? Well, you find out pieces of that in this issue.
Well, here's the thing. I know you say Splinter, but that's just a giant rat.
Oh, dude.
Oh, it we could don't be know. Any giant rat?
A lot of rats are like that in New York, big and scary.
Hang out on rooftops and watch people fight. And
yeah, I will say,
I mean, literally, yes, Pete. Yes.
I was just watching this is Green Big Mile. Maybe it's Mr. Jangles all grown up.
Oh, that's Mr. Nice. Jangles.
Pete, I know in the country you see like some sort of hedgehog on top of a hill or something.
Yep.
But that's we have that. It's different in New York.
Groundhog, but yeah.
Okay. Sure. You don't have hedges there? Those hedges are like little trees.
Oh, thanks, man.
You said big trees?
I love this. I thought the art style was fun. It's great to see the boys together kicking butt again. Yeah, the kind of deity warrior pig transformation thing was a little, not sure what's happening there, but I'm excited to find out. It's a nice kind of twist in this. Is Splinter dead? Is he that rat that was on his shoulder for a while? Like, dead what's rat. Up? Yeah. So, yeah, I'm glad we're getting to the bottom of this.
Are you happy that Splinter's sort of back?
Yeah, of course. It's their father.
No, not physically.
Well, emotionally. Right?
Did he have, wait, just a quick question, because he's a rat. He's a regular rat that got mutated to human. Did he have,
sorry,
like,
he's a rat who knows karate, right?
Yeah,
rat
so
knows
it's karate. Not a regular rat. You know?
And right. then he happened to mute. Do all rats know a different form of martial arts, you think?
Well, it depends on who raised them. You know what I mean? If somebody some raised them and cooking. Taught them. Yeah.
Some of them rat to
yeah,
cooking.
Come on,
yeah,
man.
Exactly.
Great point.
Rats
how bad do you think they wish? How bad do you think they wish that was mouse tatooey? Because rats are grosser, you know?
No, but that's the point of the... Have you even watched Ratatouille?
Or like puppy tattooing.
That's the plot of Ratatouille.
Alex, don't try to... The movie came from the word Ratatouille. Like, let's not get... Let's not dress
it
up.
I know, but they're Pixar, they leaned into it. They leaned into it. And their whole jokes about the rats being disgusting. Anyway, you were saying something about, like, Splinter was a rat who knew karate who fucked a human and had some turtles? Is that what happened?
Well, I was thinking, did he have four turtle sperm in his rat... balls.
No,
and that's
dude,
how he
don't you remember
these?
He just raised the turtles. He didn't like have
no,
sex
like
with them.
Surrogate.
Yeah, he just was the father's
figure. Real quick, Pete, real I didn't quick. Hear the whole theme song, but I believe you were saying life is like a turtle sperm here in rat balls. Is that
no,
right?
That's no, that's it. DuckTales. You're doing DuckTales. Teenage Turtles is right. Different.
I don't know. That's a pretty good theme song.
They're both great
doesn't
theme
matter.
Songs.
It doesn't matter where it started.
I mean, Mask is one of the better theme songs. You know
well,
I mean?
Hold on. We'll get to that stuff in a little bit. Yes, he raised these turtles when he was a mutated rat man.
That's right.
Great. But didn't find them. Oh, that's what I was going to say is you said he didn't have sex to make these turtles, but does Splinter fuck?
Maybe
we'll find out.
Yeah,
we're gonna find out.
Who do you think he's? Who does he? What light? What blows his hair back? His body hair back? Is it rats or humans?
I don't know.
And we all know who we're thinking of, right?
Pete, very uncomfortable. Pete's like, I don't want this.
Yeah, I'll give you a hint. They know one girl.
Yeah. We know what you're saying. We're trying to ignore this. You know what I mean? And try to take a higher road.
April has a lot of eligible bachelors to choose from. A veritable buffet of karate fighting men. And
anyway, I thought this was pretty fun. I love Jason Zarin's run, and I love the uncertainty of it that threw me purposefully for a loop, but I liked being off kilter throughout that run. This feels much more traditional to me, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
I would argue certainty is a good way of describing this, and that makes sense.
But I like Gene Luen Yang as a writer, and I trust that he is going to get to a place. He certainly gets to a place that's pretty interesting by the end of the issue. So curious to keep following this going forward.
I did have one, because I agree with you. I enjoyed this. It does seem fun to get back. It's like when we were talking about the Godzilla Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles crossover that was really rooted in the 90s cartoon. I was like, what a breath of fresh air. Knowing that we all love the Jason Aaron run. One thing in this that I think has been, I've noticed a lot happening a lot in comics in the last 6 months. There's a panel in here, big splash page with the turtles on the Manhattan Bridge for some reason, the less beautiful bridge in New York. where Michelangelo says, I'm going to say it.
I'm going to say it.
Cowabunga.
Cowabunga.
And I think there's been a thing, a retraction of just let the character just say their catchphrase rather than like reference it and then say it.
Yeah.
I think it's happened. And I'm not knocking Gene Luen Yang about this because it's just everyone. I feel like everyone feels like they need to qualify this, but I want to speak for the fans and just be like, they could just say it. I love it more when they just say it. And maybe it's a little too earnest or cheesy, but I'm like, we love them. Like, we want them to say their thing. They don't need to be so arch about it because they don't know that it's overplayed. Michelangelo doesn't know that everyone says,
you guys, all the kids say it, it's overused and party napkins and all sorts of stuff, but hey, I'm gonna say cowabunga, you know, just say cowabunga, we can all be happy.
And there's a chance that there's a continuity you could call on here, since Michelangelo in this world is a famous actor, as established in Jason Aaron's run, that maybe he is purposefully being that way. But that just struck out to me in a meta way.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's move on and talk about The Darkness, number one from Top Cow and Image Comics, written by Mark Alex. Silvestri, art by Ed Benes. Yes, what's up, Justin?
You love this, and I have a lot of questions for you.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I am definitely and I can't explain it, I am a sucker for The Darkness. I just think he is a character that looks cool, and it's like...
He's very cool in this.
It says edgy 90s to me. And I was curious about checking this one out because the recent Witchblade reboot I thought was very good, very well done, took it back to basics while taking it through a new lens. So I was excited to see, even though this is Mark Silvestri, who is, you know, part of the think tank behind developing The Darkness in the first place, whether he would reinvent it. And in fact, this is a back-to-basics new origin story for the character. I do have one question for you guys, something that I was very unclear on while I was reading this issue. Does Jackie Estacado, who's the main character of The Darkness, does he like to have sex? Has he ever had sex? I guess, like, as a corollary thing.
Great question. He had it like 8 times in this comic, bro.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Like, every 2 pages or so, there's like a very, for this rating, explicit sex scene.
He's like a Splinter type character, the amount of sex he's having.
He's having so much, I'm a little worried that maybe he's got a problem with it.
What if is there also like some sort of scene where he's at a bar and his friend is like, you got to stop having so much sex? You're having too much sex?
This made me think that this is a real person who wrote this and was trying to he's never had sex. He was trying to prove to his friends that he has a lot of sex.
That's how crazy it was. And by the way, for anybody who think we're joking, like, legitimately, I didn't count it. This is an oversized issue, but at least every 3 to 4 pages, there's a sex scene with like very cleverly draped nude bodies, barely clothed, usually with Jackie Estacado. And whenever he's not having sex, one of the other characters is talking about him having sex or pointing out other people that he's about to have sex with.
Yeah.
It's
really good. That's why I was really shocked to hear how much you love this. Yeah. But I just have to read a quick passage he has post-coitus in one of those sex scenes with a human woman that he's talking to. And this is the exchange. Are you shitting me, dude? Do I look like some kind of cheap hooker to you? Well, I wouldn't say cheap considering what I just paid for dinner. Really good. Okay. I see how it is, jerk off. And then he responds, thanks to you, I won't have to.
I mean,
I was like, yo.
It's great to hear Jerkoff coming back. You know what I mean? I haven't had that term in a long time. So I was like, oh, wow, they're trying to bring Jerkoff back.
One thing I want to clarify. Like, I have liked old Darkness comics despite my better judgment, just because, again, like, this dude having, like, demons flying out of him and eating people is fun. This comic is like the dark, erroneous flip of what they did on Witchblade, where we talked a lot about there was something about the Witchblade being invasive and Sarah Pazzini retaking it with her sexuality, with her body, trying to fight it and hold on to her own agency, that here becomes like, let's fuck. And that's pretty much it. It's the... where that was progressive, this is regressive.
Yes, exactly. And if it were to be turned to have meaning there, but it literally feels like posturing.
I mean, this comic should be called The Darkness as a Sex Problem. And then I would have been like, oh, this is a lot better.
Yeah. He'd be like, I have a sex solution. Is what he would say. That's what he would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Appropriate art, I would say, for what you get. Like, this is a Top Cow comic from Top to Cow, for sure.
Yes. It feels fresh out the 1996.
100%.
Can I ask a question? So Mark Silvestri, I thought, was an artist, right, on this originally. Now he's writing?
He's been writing and doing art for a while. He's actually been doing art a lot less. I had completely forgotten that Garth Ennis co-created The Darkness.
I was also surprised.
Which is kind of crazy.
But it just felt like Silvestri was writing, which is cool. You know, do whatever you want. But it felt like the artist who was then working for Silvestri was trying to be like, hey, this is kind of like your art style, right? Like, I'm doing an impression of, which I 100%. Felt like,
well, yeah.
Go in a different direction if you're, or is it better to be like, hey, Silvestri's writing, let's try to get a Silvestri feel. You know what I mean?
Ed Benes is in this world in general. Like, it's not like it's an aping situation. And, you know, I think it's appropriately close, but not mimicry.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, regardless, that was that. Why don't we move on, talk about The End, 2099, number
let's
one
talk
for
about
Marvel.
The End.
Written by Steve Orlando, art by Ibrahim Roberson, per the title. The end of the 2099 universe is here. And of course, as one would expect, it comes from Galactus, who is also Null at the same time. He is going to eat the entire universe. And the only one who stands in his way is Pete's favorite character, Mephisto, who gathers a bunch of heroes from throughout the 2099 universe. Meanwhile, Abyssal, is that the name of the character? Abscissus? I don't know.
Silver Surfer?
No, Galactus.
Abyssus. He gathers a bunch of bad versions of characters from throughout time and the multiverse to fight against him. So, surprisingly, this is yet another tournament happening in Tournament City, aka comic book stores.
I think this is fun. I mean, I thought the kind of Venom-looking Galactus was worth it. I mean, that was really kind of a cool look and kind of fun to see. You know, twist at the end there. I feel like this is kind of a fun, insane mashup of ideas. And, I'm into it. I think it's weird, though. I feel like I have to root for Mephisto's team in this, which I don't know how I feel about. But other than that, this is kind of fun.
They're all going to be married to Mary Jane by the end of this. Is that what you want?
Do you think the world's going to end in 2099?
Yeah, that's what I have on my calendar.
We're going to make it there? I guess we'll see.
Wow.
Go ahead, Justin.
I was going to say Steve Orlando is perfect for this because he's able to touch on all the characters from this universe that I really enjoy, from the X-Men to Spidey 2099 to Punisher, even we get in here real quick. Really great. While also pushing it obscenely forward with the reveal and on the last couple of pages. So I'm on board with this. I always have loved the 2099 universe. Rereading that original, I believe it's Peter David run on Spidey 2099 is so good.
The first half of this issue, Steve Orlando has been working on the 2099 universe for a while. So the first half of the issue feels like a crazy amount of exposition if you haven't been keeping up with stuff. But despite what I said earlier, once they get to the tournament, like you guys are saying, it is actually a lot of fun and they're having a really good time. There's a moment with Ghost Rider 2099 where Mephisto's like, you're not real, and just gets rid of him. That's very funny to just. Mephisto is a fad trolling the CBR forums or something. The art's good as well. So get past the first half of the issue. If you haven't been reading along, read the second half of the issue. I think you'll have a fun time. Speaking of fights and tournaments, it is All Fight Month over at Woo-hoo! DC, where we're getting one-on-one matchups in a series of one-shots and cutting into ongoing series as well. These you actually have to read in order, by the way, because they are telling through usually, I think, like two, maybe four pages, an ongoing story of what's been going on with Booster Gold, who was taken over by Darkseid, or in fact, Darkseid himself. But here, Aquaman 12, written by Jeremy Adams, art by John Timms. This is a surf and turf battle as Aquaman takes on Hawkman, as I keep accidentally calling him, so I'm just going to say it. And the way this part of the tournament works is they get three rounds, or in the case of this issue, two rounds, but it's best two out of three to win. And each time they come back, they can take on another form. I think we really liked the issue that came out last week with Superman versus Captain Atom. How did you feel about round two?
Yeah, I thought this was fun. You know, Aquaman kind of beats down Hawkman twice. So I thought it was cool, epic fight. Yeah, I like the big kind of like KO, you know, at the end. Kind of makes me feel like I'm playing a video game or something, which is fun. Yeah, love the art, love the action. I'm still having fun with this KO event. So I thought this was cool.
Yeah, same. I like this. I like how powerful Aquaman gets to be, and sort of everyone almost responding to everyone by being like, hey, man, I'm pretty awesome.
Dude, water's everywhere, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Think about it.
That's true. I am drinking a beer right now, which he could clearly drown me in if I were fighting Aquaman right now. Though my big takeaway from this issue, though, was like, how come Hawkman just doesn't hit in I love Hawkman. I think Hawkman is awesome in this issue. Why aren't we getting Hawkman as a major character in the DC universe? It just hasn't
worked.
We
have at different times we've gotten some cool versions.
I think people just get in their head about the continuity of their character. They're like, oh boy, how do I reconcile all that? When it's like, he's a cool dude with wigs who hunts for treasure. Like, just go with that. And
he's got a big mace.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. He's also, though, very serious. He also gets tied romantically to Hawk Girl or Hawk Woman or both of them through resurrection and whatever. So lots of stuff going on there. And again, I think it's like Legion, where it probably is an easier nut to crack if you don't worry about continuity, but then fans will be like, whoa, but you forgot about Thought.
Yeah, I just feel like get a clean take out here and let's just have him do some stuff because he's awesome. Great character.
Ultimate Black Panther, number 23 from Marvel, written by Brian Hill, art by Carlos Nieto. This is another penultimate issue of the series, and we haven't really been following this since the first couple of issues, or at least I'll say I haven't, but with the end of the Ultimate Universe here, again, I thought it was worth checking in on it. And, oh, boy, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, man, yeah. This is great. Hey, you got to head east, guys. Go east. Yeah, crazy battle here. We got the son versus father. Love the art and that kind of cool giant Black Panther mech was cool. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, the art I really, really liked here. It has such a distinct style, very clean battle we get to see. I love the way that everyone, like, this battle goes hard. You get a giant mechanical panther. You get Bast turning a ton of people into also panther people, which I was like, this is taken. It's like literally pulling all the levers at the same time. The thing I said about this series just from the get-go was, it just feels so separate from the rest of it and not necessarily set. This story doesn't feel like it needs to be set in the Ultimate Universe. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather this just be on its own so that it could also keep going after I feel like this will end in next issue as well, when it could just keep going and be this like big epic family and beyond drama that's happening.
Transformers, number 27 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Dan Mora. As usual, a bunch of Transformers stuff going on in this issue. This is very much a Autobots-focused issue as they try to figure out what to do with some new members, one of which used to be a Decepticon.
Oh, man.
Uh-oh. And we're also jabbing through this Miles Mayhem story real quickly. I thought there was going to be more subterfuge there, but by the end of this issue, he is out in prison. I certainly intimate that he's starting the mask program, but I guess
yes. Come on, coming Max. Soon.
And like that part is cool. I actually like that. It's strange to me that Transformers and G.I. Joe is all building up to Mask, a piece of IP that many, many, many fewer people know about. Not doesn't seem that way on this podcast, for instance, since Pete and I have said Mask for all 19 years we've been on the air.
That's right.
So that part's cool. The rest of this book, though, I'm like, there's a lot of different jets talking to each other in this. And there's so much just like chitter chat of like, hey, actually, would you mind running this? Hey, how are you feeling over here? Like, I was recently resurrected. My name is
Hey, it's got to be weird to, come back to life. You know what I mean? I'm glad that they're dealing with it, you know?
Now, how does it work with becoming? Because in this issue, we have one of the Jet guys. He goes from being a Decepticon to an Autobot. Is it a scraping thing? Is it like getting a tattoo removed?
Yeah. And then repainting? Right? Like, do you get it, like, you have like that water where it just kind of like lifts it off gently? Or do you got to kind of like scrape that off?
I would love to watch a TikTok of them just like power washing off the Decepticon logo. That would be very sad.
Quick, Decepticons are coming. They got to change logos.
I wish that we saw that because that would have been cool. Because I had me thinking, like, is the paint color of their body's skin? Or do they come out gray and they're like, paint me, mommy?
Oh, my God.
Does Optimus ever say, paint me, mommy?
There's a t-shirt
While we're talking about paint jobs in Optimus Prime, how is another Transformer allowed to be the same color as Optimus Prime? Hey,
and be his friend and also be in charge? I was like, get out of here,
dude.
Have you even seen
the movie?
No. Can you explain to me the guy who looks exactly like Optimus Prime? Let me finish because I need you to clarify this. There's a scene, and I'm definitely paraphrasing here. He's like, well, I guess I'll have to be Prime. And I was like, but isn't Optimus Prime Prime? Because that's in his name?
Yeah. Here's what's crazy because he's saying, I guess you get to be Magnus. And I was like, guys, don't. Please don't do another thing. Let him be Prime.
So is he Ultra Magnus and Optimus Prime is Prime?
Yeah. Or is Prime his name? That's like being, my name is Corporal Justin.
Yeah, like Prime is a kind of, stature as far as a leader.
All right, so what's up with the other guy? Who's the other guy?
Or does he just have the Amazon Prime subscription and they all order through Optimus?
All right, first off, let me just get this out of the way. Cool cover, fucking Soundwave. Come on, dude. Razorbeak, Eject. I just want to say that, like, Prime is a title, and when Prime dies in the 80s animated Transformers, the animated movie, which is this is all kind of based on, and you should see if you're reading this comic, he gives him the Allspark, and that guy who looks like him is supposed to kind of take over, but then an unlucky guy, Radamist, ends up taking over. So it's like, there's this people who kind of train for these jobs, but then it's, sometimes won over through different battles and stuff. So, it's kind of a level to get to as far as their kind of people are concerned. But I love this. It's also kind of interesting because you don't get Transformers kind of talking about their feelings or how they're kind of dealing with stuff. So that it's kind of cool to hear them talking like, man, I just
Autobots,
came to life.
Transform and sit down. We
sit
really
down and
to,
let's talk because we talk. We've been through a lot. And
how are you processing?
I thought it was really moving to hear these machines talk about like how majestic Earth is and how kind of like interesting humans are. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I was eating it up. I thought this was really
Please,
cool.
Don't talk unless you're holding the Allspark. When you're holding the Allspark, you can talk and then pass it to the next person. Thank you.
Sure, I can transform into a jet, but I can't transform out of my imposter syndrome.
Hey, yeah, man. We all struggle with things. Yeah, I think this is just a blast, and my childhood is having such a great time with this. The fact that they're also doing, like, Mask is melting my brain. I cannot wait. I think it would be such a cool crossover.
I have so many more questions, too, but I'll save them. Like, if Optimus was a human, would he transform into a flesh car?
What?
And would he live?
You're a human, you can't transform, bro. You know that. Like, what are you even talking about?
When you said, would he live?
Do you mean, like, go through a goth phase? Or what do you...
He's not alive in robot form, but when he transforms into a flesh car, he's like, finally, I'm alive.
I don't know. Listen, I'm
going to
confess.
Humans can't transform into things, bro. Like, what are you talking about?
I'm going to confess, I was driving the other day, and I thought about this for like a half hour. If he became a human somehow, in the same way they became in Beast Wars.
Right.
And he transformed if he was human form, and his body was like, I'm going to do the normal thing I do, which is transform into a truck. He would die, right?
Like his bones would break and crack. Yeah.
In Stranger Things, when Vecna does his thing.
Pete, you're the expert.
I don't understand what you're asking. Like, yeah.
Would Optimus Prime die if he became a flesh car? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, exactly. That's my question.
Can humans transform into cars? No, Justin, they can't. And if I try, I might break something. But I don't know what else to tell
you. They're just robots that look vaguely like cars.
In disguise. They're robots in disguise.
Like, if I had a lot of surgery, like I did it through a hospital and I had a lot of surgery to transform into a flesh car. Would I die?
Yes, you would, because you can't be a car.
That I would be awesome if I rolled up, Pete. You finally gave us your address, and I rolled up to visit you and I drove Alex, a flesh car made of Alex.
I would run
for my life.
I just want to mention my eyes are the headlights.
Yes, definitely.
Cool. Of course. Cool, man.
Yeah, and your teeth are the grill, just like the car cartoon.
Yep.
Yeah, what when was the kid, that car? Yeah, the kid
he would
transform.
He would touch anytime he got wet.
Are the cars in cars? Are they made out of flesh? Are they flesh cars?
Oh, fuck.
There's no such thing as a flesh car, bro. Flesh cars don't exist.
Oh, but Transformers do. Okay, why don't we move on? The Amazing Spider-Man number 17 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Pepe Larraz. In this issue, we're back with Space Spider-Man, who has a little bit of a flirtation with an alien lady and a bunch of other things going down.
Leading
to, sadly, the end of this era, it seems like, because Spider-Man is heading home as we loop back to the Hellgate story. Justin, I believe you were pretty excited about this one, so take it away.
I said this on the live show. I have become – this Amazing Spider-Man title has superseded Ultimate Spider-Man as the one that I am more excited about. I've just loved the way the chances that Joe Kelly has taken on this story and these wild swings. I love Peter in space. I love his relationship with this alien creature, I guess. I don't know.
Into it.
Well, she's into it a little bit.
No, she's like, dude, I would break you.
I've been there. I love it. That's okay. That's part of it.
You've been broken by an alien? Is that what you just admitted?
I've been told.
Did you just admit it that you were broken by an alien?
I didn't say alien.
In space? So you got your heart broken in space?
I mean, it felt alien. I mean, she basically turned me into a flesh car. And I loved every minute of it. No, but this is the kind of like, I want these relationships for Peter Parker. And this is like just a good superhero situational relationship that I hope they continue, as it seems like at the end of this issue, they are going back to Earth. Keep it going. I've been enjoying this top to bottom. It's smart, creative, while keeping all the usual angsty Peter Parker themes in the book. Very fun.
I agree. Joe Kelly is a great writer. This is fun. I love the emotional story Pete tells about Uncle Ben there. Big fan of the rice. Yeah, fun rocket stuff. Cool last panel. flirting was like, meh, mid, but amazing art.
Wait, are you saying his flirting was mid, or you just don't like the relationship?
I just don't. I thought it was fun because he was like, you know, like, hey, man, you know, let's talk about that kiss. And she's like, ha ha, you are puny human. I would break you.
What if she was like, I'm Space Mary Jane? Would you like it better?
Well, no, because, you know, I don't want Space Mary Jane. I want Regulation Mary Jane.
Regulation.
Regulation.
I really like this. I agree with everything you said, Justin. I'm going to definitely, obviously, keep reading this going forward because I've really been enjoying this run. But obviously, I don't know what went on behind the scenes or anything like this. But I'm really bummed out that we seem to be ending this Space Earth Spider-Man story. And it really... not to get too, like, galaxy brain about this, but it really, to me, feels like it points to the amount of patience current audiences have with comic books. Because you think, not to, again, like, get, like, old Maddie about it, but back in the day, you would get this sort of run going on for who knows how long, where you'd be like, ah, right. Space Spider-Man and Earth Spider-Man, love it. 12 issues, 24 issues, who cares? Because we're on the title forever. Now you got to go like 5 issues and wrap it up, and that's all you can guarantee to go for. And it's such a bummer because it really feels like both this and the Earth storyline were just getting going. I love both of those status quos.
I agree with you because I could watch this, I could read this for a lot longer. The only thing that I think from a story perspective outside of the more attention span complaint that you're saying is if this is all pinned on Hellgate, we have to do some more Hellgate. Because I was like, even in this issue, they're like, I'm friends with Hellgate. And it's like, right, what's his deal? So, like, I think if we're getting back to that, it makes sense to get back to that.
Totally. And they have a crossover coming up with Venom. So that also feels like the reason to get him back to Earth. So he's available for the crossover. Or
MJ
whatever.
Venom?
So you can't, like... Yeah, this is kind of what I'm saying. Like, in the modern era of comics, you can't keep Peter Parker off Earth for 2 years in comic books because you need him to appear in other crossovers and things, which is a bit of a bummer for the storytelling because I feel like under the steady hand of Joe Kelly, he could keep him in space indefinitely and it would continue to be a lot of fun and really flesh out these new characters that we've just gotten to know. But as is, it's good. It'll continue to be good. Excited to follow it.
Yes.
Next up, DC KO Wonder Woman versus Lobo, number one from DC Comics, written by Joelle Jones, art by Jason Howard, Carrie Nord, and Daniel Bayless. This is another All Fight Month book, giving us the bout of the title, Diana versus the Main Man. And this is great. This is everything, personally, that I wanted out of All Fight Month. It is... absolutely creatively wild. Joelle Jones is clearly having a blast writing this. The art is awesome. The different art styles move effortlessly. And we get just ludicrous swings that are so much fun with both Lobo in all of his different iterations and Diana in all of her iterations. This is just a blast front to back.
The new 52 Lobo show up. I was God. Wow, did not see that coming. But it's well done. We get a sort of a winky shout out.
Yeah, the who in the fun. New 52 line. That's
yes,
fun.
That was great. It makes for him to get easily wrecked by Wonder Woman. This the people that we talked. There's a question that we got on the live show about like people seem to be a little gathering unhappiness about this event. But I don't know. I think this issue pays off exactly what we want out of this event. It's a blast. It's meant to be fun. It's great action across the board where these characters are getting to be badass, both in their each own ways. And I thought the payoff was good at the end. Like, this was just top to bottom exactly what I want out of this.
Yeah, this was. I agree. This was so much fun. Love this cover. I laughed out loud at the scrotal implosion line. I thought that was hysterical. They were having fun. We were in on it. You know, the new 52 line, I was like, this hurts me a little bit, but I still think it was cool. Yeah.
Which Lobo do you like better, the Space Wolverine one or the smaller Space Wolverine one?
I don't appreciate what you're doing, but I like this Lobo that we see on the cover here. Yeah, I I just think this is a blast, and this was such a fun balance of humor and action. Also, the art was glorious.
Yep. All right, moving on to Ultimate Wolverine, number 12 from Marvel, written by Chris Condon, art by Alessandro Capuccio. In this issue, Wolverine is dealing with the death of everybody that he was working with in the Resistance, and he is coming for the people who made him, as well as trying to free Phoenix, who we know, of course, is Jean Grey, yes. But he doesn't know that in this continuity. The thing that's very interesting, I think, about this issue, and Justin and I talked to Chris Condon about this a bit back in New York Comic Con, this was supposed to be the last issue of the title. Ultimately, they added four more issues for a very specific reason that he starts to get into here, and that'll spit out through issues 13 through 16. But if this had ended here, this is a, I thought, fantastic, incredibly satisfying conclusion.
Yeah, I agree. I thought this was a great ending issue. Also, a beautiful moment. I was so excited. We got, Jean Grey and Wolverine walking off into the sunset together. Hells yeah, are you fucking kidding me?
I thought you were going to say the beautiful moment was Wolverine killing Cyclops.
That was also beautiful. Got me choked up. I love the action. I love the art. This was a really fun 12 issues and a cool exploration of a Wolverine we don't see. You know, he talks even less than the Wolverine we know and love. So, I had an absolute blast with all 12 of these issues.
You know what's hard in comics is to do something that you can feel coming. Like the Jean Grey reveal we get here, it's sort of like, yes, naturally.
Right.
But the reveal, the way it's paced and shown visually, really worked, I thought, to still, get you a little, catch your breath a little bit. And then the way that it emotionally played out, where he's sort of like, he's there for revenge, and there was a voice in his head, but the twist of, like, it was actually comforting. Mm-hmm. And to realize it's her, and to realize that he is connected with her, paying off so much of the Wolverine Jean Grey relationship that we've known for years.
Yes.
And setting us up in a place where I was like, I can't wait to read a next issue where they're together doing who knows what, where they can actually have a relationship in it, which we've never really seen played out before, except for in, very like spin-off-y or Age of Apocalypse sort of scenarios where it never was really able to be emotional. So that's so hard to pull off. And I feel like they just nail it so hard in this book.
And by the way, I will mention for everybody, this isn't a spoiler because I don't know how it goes, but when we talked to Chris Condon, he mentioned the story of the next four issues is going to be, why does magic look exactly the way that she does in the main universe in the Ultimate Universe?
Oh,
so
cool.
We're going to get into that. And I've been like, since we talked to him a couple of months back, I've been dying to know what that story is. So very excited.
Yeah, because that sounds fucked up. That sounds problematic for a character that I like.
Yeah. Yes.
Miss Truesdale and the Rise of Man, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mike Mignola, art by Jesse Lonergan. This is the second series following Miss Truesdale, who is a Victorian lady who is sent back in time to one of her ancestors, who is a barbarian, and tracing the history of the Hellboy universe. I will mention that we did a comic book club recently with our Patreon supporters, patreon.com/comicbookclub, where we talked about the new book, Drome, by Jesse Lonergan. That was a lot of fun. If you're looking for it, you can't find it unless you're a Patreon supporter. That's for them only, so join.
Come join.
Come hang out. We had a lot of fun. We'll do another one next month. So,
but if you want a taste of what some of the visuals that happen in Drome, you could buy this issue.
Yeah.
Because it has some real connection points to Drome in the art and story in the back half of this issue.
Yeah. I mean, this also has kind of like a circle of life kind of thing going on for sure. Love the art in this. Love the kind of story. You can't trust a snake, man. You know, mm-hmm. If a snake starts talking, you really can't trust a snake. I mean, that's a time story we've learned time and time again.
Pete, that's very judgmental because I've been talking to some snakes and they have good advice for me.
No, you shouldn't do it, dude. You know what I mean? You should check out this thing called The Bible. It's going to get animated soon.
Animated?
Yeah,
really?
Not illustrated, animated.
Yeah, and you know, it's got
Bible the Animated series.
Yeah, check out the... I was a big fan of Bible the Animated series.
They already did that, right? Like with a bunch of vegetables and stuff.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Yes.
About Sausage Party?
Yep.
No. That
Foodtopia.
Oh. No, Veggie Tales.
Right.
That is literally what that is. That is literally what that is.
Life is like a hurt.
Anyway, this is a gorgeous book. Like we're talking about, Jesse Lottergan's art is unlike anything else on the stands, and I think it's worth checking out just for that. Let's move on. Talk about
the art alone.
The Infernal Hulk, number 2 from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Nick Klein and Kev Walker. Yes. There's a new Devil Hulk who is walking the earth, and in this issue, he walks the seas, which is not a thing you can do, but he tries to bond with a monster who lives under the sea with Namor.
On,
yes? Oh, did I take your line, Justin?
That's my line, under the sea.
Anyway, yeah, that's what's going on this issue, and we get another little bit on the twist of what's going on with Bruce Banner.
Yeah. Dave, I guess is what we should call him. First off, cool cover. This is insane. This is so crazy. This is really kind of like... The Hulk is, out to kill us. So it's weird that we're rooting against. This is the first time I'm rooting against the Hulk, so I don't like this. But I love this comic. It's a weird feeling for me. Am I supposed to be rooting for this David guy now? I don't know what to do. But this is kind of like Hulk and all the monsters of the world versus us is an interesting, really cool concept that really is kind of taking the Hulk story up a notch. So, Philip Kennedy Johnson is killing the game, and this is really kind of turned up to 11 right now, and I'm all for it.
The David Banner I thought was a interesting turn at the end. I don't know if you've heard this in the original Hulk series, TV series. He wasn't called Bruce Banner. It was David Banner. Because they were like, the name Bruce is too gay, which I was like, what? How could that
I'd say even bad time.
Yeah. But chaotic note from whatever TV exec was like, yeah, I heard Bruce is gay. Can't say Bruce. It's like, okay. That there's no way that's real.
People named David aren't gay, so
yeah. Go ahead. I would argue it's just someone check the stats on that. I really like this. The first issue was amazing. I thought this is a funny turn to have him go under the sea. There's a great scene where Namor is taking a call from Bucky, Black Widow, and Wolverine. Which I was like, huh, just having a little video chat. And they're like, hey, watch out, Hulk's right behind you.
Yeah.
And,
I just thought that was funny. The new Avengers right now, right?
Yes.
So that's kind of what's going on there. But yeah, it's still weird Marvel Universe stuff. And I like it.
Yeah, they zoom each other all the time, Justin. It's
well, I think like the goal here, the thing that I get from it is that the previous Hulk run was mostly self-contained. It was off on its own, wandering through the backwoods and stuff. This is taking it and moving it into the Marvel Universe proper and showing what's happening when this new Infernal Hulk gets right in the middle of absolutely everything, which is cool. It's different.
Very cool. And big. I feel like we're headed towards some kaiju battle shit soon, I feel like. So that's fun. And it does feel so meticulously building toward a much larger story, which is great.
Assorted Crisis Events, number 7 from Image Comics, written by Dennis Camp, art by Eric Zawadzki. The idea of this anthology series is that time is broken. And this issue, we get a guy who keeps having dead versions of himself show up around him, and he has increasing problems getting rid of his own dead body. Like with a lot of this series, I think the metaphor here is seeing your death everywhere, but he is literally seeing his death everywhere. This one didn't hit me as hard as every single previous issue of this title did. Still very good. I love Eric Zawadzki's art, but this one, I don't know. There was something about like the execution of the metaphor seemed a little lighter and sillier to me.
That felt like the intention here to me, but like, so I still liked it. I thought for sure he was going to make corpse-flavored ice cream for a hot second in this, which I was like, that'll be wild. But the story is, like, I just am endlessly impressed at the ways in which Dennis Camp can make this very sort of pinpointed premise of time is broken and hear the different stories about that and find new ways to touch on different emotional resonances and metaphors with our regular lives each issue. So one of my favorite books in the stands.
Yeah, this is an impressive comic. I feel like maybe this is over my head a little bit, but it's really kind of fucked up and artistic and interesting. The imagery is just really kind of next level. This is really fucked up, but impressive. I thought this issue was great. I'm very intrigued and interested to see what happens next. This is cool comics, man.
Sure is. And can you hear it? Can you feel it? Can you hear it coming?
Is there an age?
What are you talking about? This is the second Namor
sighting. The revelation is upon us!
Uh-oh, get out your animated Bibles.
VeggieTales have become the X-Men, and so the age of revelation is upon us once again, where we talk about the blockbuster event for the X-Men side of the Marvel Universe that has taken them X years into the future. Revelation and his choristers are turning everybody into babbles, and how's that working out? We're going to find out with four new titles this week, starting with Unbreakable X-Men number 3 from Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by Mario Santori with Luciano Vecchio, Tiago Palma, David Tinto, and R.B. Silva. And I'll tell you what, when you hear that many artists are on a book, you know it's going to be a banger.
Yeah, you know they had some kind of fun jam sesh.
Yep. So here's a big, very glib. I actually really like this because this series focused very squarely on the relationship between Gambit and Rogue. I think they tied this up really nicely, but I do think, reading between the lines, there was some point that it came out that this event was supposed to be 5 months long, and then they were like, and it's ending at 3 months. I don't know if that was an error with the 5 months thing or something did change, but definitely reading this week's books, I was like, wow, these wrapped up real quick.
Yeah.
And it started to feel to me like there maybe was more planned and they pulled back on it, potentially.
At the very least, these must have been four-issue series.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the three issues feels just so strange, and every book across the board, I think, felt rushed at the end of the day.
Well, and this one, I think, it starts to speed up a little bit in the last page or two, but again, keeping a focus on Gambit, there's some really emotional stuff that happens with Rogue in here. Yeah. And Gelsman really knows how to write his inner emotional journey, so that worked out well, nicely for me. It was mostly in terms of looking like, wow, that's a lot of artists, where definitely something happened behind the scenes.
Well, and I do think this works as well because Gail Simone keeps to the story areas that she is telling in the regular Uncanny X-Men book.
Totally.
And that's great. I like all these characters. I love the Gambit-Rogue relationship and sort of this chapter that we're in that she's telling in Uncanny X-Men because it's really beautiful and sweet. And we get the closest to a happy ending I think we've gotten out of maybe all of these Revelation books here. So that's good. If you want to hear some real Gambit dialogue, I guarantee you will get it in this book. It is Cajun on Cajun. He's going to have me a seafood boil if he keeps dis up, as he says on one of the pages.
Yeah, you know, I think we all ship Gambit and Rogue, so this is just a beautiful love story here. What a great kind of kiss moment we have, and man, Rogue clapping motherfuckers' heads off. Holy shit, Rogue. That's some work right there. But yeah, great to see Namor again. You know, you don't see Namor for a while, and then like two books, bam, back in it. So, yeah.
Everyone's thinking about the beach.
I thought this was enjoyable.
And let me say just real quick on the all the artists, I do think they did a pretty good job of making it as close to seamless as I can imagine when you have this many artists having to jump in.
Yes. Yeah, 100% agree on that. Like, there's nothing against the artist. It's just there's no way of looking at that and being like, everything went real smooth. This was our plan for the
movie. This is what they planned.
Yes. Sinister Six, number three from Marvel, written by David Marquez, art by Rafael Lorero. We have been following a ragtag team put together by Mr. Sinister. They were confronted by Revelation in the last issue, and it all goes down here as Havoc makes the ultimate sacrifice.
Oh,
Justin, I think you liked this series. What did you think about the wrap-up?
Yeah, I mean, it's got a little messy. Like, this is the one where I felt the compression maybe the most. Because it felt like there was Havoc had a very specific plan, and then it just gets sort of squished, I think, in this. And you don't really – his plan seems sort of shitty the way it spilled out here. I like the reveal of who's in the Venom symbiote. I thought it was going a different direction, but I thought this worked. And, you know, tragic. We see Revelation babble someone, and I'm just like, I don't know. It's meant – the idea of it is scary and interesting. The way they've used it across this event has been sort of like babbled, and then sort of like the person's like, blah, 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 and I'm like, what is that? What are we doing? What does this mean? Because it happens to Phantom X, and then she sort of just like turns to dust randomly. And I was like, what? She just loses language, I guess. I don't know. It's just this event. I'm very curious what's going to happen in the finale. Is that next week we're getting?
Yeah, or I think longer. So. Maybe? No, it's at the end of the month. We still got the full month to go.
Well, it just feels like it's been so scattershot that I don't know how we're going to bring any number of these threads together.
We're also getting a lot, and I think this was last week as well, of characters being like, Doug, what are you doing? And he'd be like, I'm Revelation. And we still, 3 months into this, don't really know who Revelation is or what he wants or anything like that other than what we've been told. And that makes it tough to not really have a central figure that I think we really understand very well.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, in this issue, it's like, oh, yeah, Revelation's here, but really we should focus on Mr. Sinister, right?
But I mean, they don't even focus on Mr. Sinister that much, honestly.
Yeah, but like, they go after, like, their plan is to kill him.
There's no fun Sinister stuff in this book. That was a big
zero.
Yeah. Iron and Frost, number three from Marvel, written by Kevin Scott, art by Ruairi Coleman. Emma Frost has a hole where her heart should be, and she's been in diamond form ever since. Meanwhile, Tony Stark has become the Iron King because of the X-Virus. But don't worry, there's another AI Tony Stark who shows up to kind of save the day. What'd you guys think about this one?
Well, let's do a JT Sizzle temp check here. This is his baby.
Oh, my God. Excuse me. Pete's either getting He's choked crying. Up or dying in his...
I'm dying. But I just think... crying or dying. This is one of the JT Sizzle ships here. I just want to do a temp check. How you feeling before you read this and all things were revealed? Like, how are you feeling walking into this?
I was cautiously optimistic with this through the first two issues. And then the first half of this issue, real wobbly on it. I was like, it's just like not a lot happening. But I actually really liked the final scene here where we get Tony and Emma set up as like star-crossed lovers. And I thought that was cool. That pays off my thing. And I actually really liked the little coda, the sort of one-page coda we get at the end here that involves a little bit of time travel via technology. So I think this landed the plane in a wobbly way, but that still counts as a landing. Just ask Launchpad McQuack from the TV show Rat Balls.
Yeah, we're really aging ourselves in this one, man. But yeah, I agree. It got a little wonky, but I think the kind of love story won out, which was great.
Love a rom-com.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have it. And yeah, I think they did a good job kind of setting it up and playing with it. It got a little weird for me where it's like, if they send a robot into the future or whatever that kind of thing was. But all right. You know what I mean?
And sorry, just to check, Ratballs was the TV show where the rats transformed into flesh balls. Is that correct? And they were bouncing here and there and everywhere. I believe that's
yes, no, that's exactly. Gummy bears.
Gummy balls.
Yeah,
gummy
balls. We talking about snorks?
Always.
Or was it street sharks? Which one were we talking about?
What are we talking about? We're talking about Long Shots, number 3 from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman and Jerry Duggan, art by Alan Robinson. In this series, Mojo has created a TV show featuring a bunch of also-rans. It's down to Wonder Man and Hellcat in this issue, and they end up sacrificing themselves to save the world. This was satirical and ridiculous. I think this was my favorite thing out of the event. Probably, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe there'll be something else, but I don't think anything else is going to beat it at this point. It's ludicrous. Absolutely insane. To the point that in this issue, Mojo is like, wow, this was the best thing in Age of Revelation, which is very funny. Not all of the jokes worked, but there's such a metric ton of jokes here, down to the Bishop time travel twist that is so stupid. I laughed out loud at
it. But it's hilarious. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Like, this is, again, though, another one where we ended last issue with Longshot being like, all right, I'm coming into the title. They pick up this issue. He's like, I'm not doing this. Which feels like there was one issue there where he got involved, right?
Yeah, it is. That's why, like, this issue felt like there had to do a lot of plot stuff, and so it had to be less fun and jokey, I feel like. And there still are a lot of jokes, but I definitely – it's weird to be like this joke-a-minute satire felt like it was squished and needed another issue to pay off on what was set up, but I did feel that way.
I dig the Doug. Jerry Duggan's comedy voice kind of really came out in this issue for me. I thought Bishop was hilarious with the "you guys weren't kidding about the password sharing" line was fun. The internal doom scrolling thing was doom. The spider buggy with Thelma and Louise moment. I mean, this is great art, great times. This was a ton of fun, and they really did such a great job with this issue.
You get a little sweet Wonder Man and Hellcat stuff, too. So it definitely hit some notes.
Yeah. And it sure sounds like we are going to be getting a Wonder Man series, probably timed out to when the TV series is coming out, though maybe not, because I don't think they're solicited it yet. That's going to have Wonder Man and Hellcat in it. So probably in classic Big Two comic book fashion, they'll release it a year later, I guess.
Smart. And good cover on Long Shots, I would also say.
For sure. And that's it for the Age of Revelation for the moment. Let's move on and talk about Crownsville, number 2 from Odie Press, written by Rodney Barnes, art by Aliyah Benetti. We had Rodney on the show this week, the live show.
Oh, we should have asked him about it.
We should have. Pete, why didn't you do that?
Oh, man, that's
Pete,
my
that
fault.
Was your job. It's always your job.
One job. I had one job.
Yeah, your job is to ask the bulk of the questions while Justin and I sit there and either point out their wall or just thank them for what they're doing with no follow-up questions.
Oh, wow, man. It sounds like your guys' job is a lot better than mine. Yeah.
This easier.
All right. This is powerful and amazing, and this is what's great about comics. I mean, this is just moving panels, heartbreaking, true story stuff that kind of wrecks your world and opens up your mind. This is just what comics should be. This is just the peak comics. I can't say enough amazing things about this comic.
Talking to Rodney about it on the live show, I asked about the movement from the characters being like, this is a fucked up place with bad stories, into being like, let's see where these ghosts go. That happens in this issue, and I was like, wow, that's amazing. It's something that I wouldn't think would have happened, and I really went along with it, because it's just really well done. But to highlight the art here is where I would like, the art is just really nice. And Alex, you mentioned it on the live show as well, about the wash on all of these panels just really is work. It works. It feels like this is paint peeling off the walls. It feels like you're uncovering a dusty book about this horrible place. And that's It's a, just a great, great choice for the book.
Yeah, just to mention, because I didn't mention the plot before, so this takes place in the real Crownsville in Annapolis, Maryland, that was the site of many atrocities back in the day before it was closed. Many people believe now it's haunted. In this book, a detective ends up going there and exploring the hauntings that are happening. And like you said, very different sort of ghost story. Next up, Nova Centurion, number 2 for Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Alvaro Lopez and Mateo De La Fuente. In this issue, Nova is hard on the track of Ravenous, a guy that he went up against in the Annihilation War at the behest of the Kree-Skrull War, which is the name of a gang, not the Kree-Skrull War, the comic book event. And he's building a little team around him at the same time. I feel like I said this with the first issue, but Jed McKay just really excels at down on their luck people doing capers. He's great at it. Like, I know we've been kind of iffy about some of the stuff that he's done on Avengers and some of the stuff on X-Men, and that feels like very serious takes, and I don't want to pigeonhole somebody, but the difference between that and Nova Centurion, which I am having a blast reading so far, are just night and day, personally.
Well, this reminds me of the Black Cat book.
Totally.
In that same way, and so that is cool. This is the Jed McKay that I've always been a fan of. So I really like this as well. I really love the Nova character. Richard Rider, much like R. Alex Zalbin, gives himself a clean shave to head out into the world, and it changes his whole life.
Nice. Yeah, cool cover. This was just a cool issue. Love the action. Easy to follow what's going on. This was a blast.
I mean, you're absolutely right, but I love easy to follow as a
creature. Well, sometimes in comics, shit is just, you know,
like a connect the dots that doesn't fuck around, you know?
Yeah.
Like a maze diner menu. Like,
we just complained about Imperial being the last cosmic event that this spun out of being overly complicated. So the fact that you're right, this does introduce a ton of concepts, but you don't need to read Annihilation War. Or know who Ravenous is to really enjoy this. Is a testament to how Jed McKay lays it all out.
That's right.
Geiger, number 19 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Gary Frank. In this issue, we are following Ash Arden, the glowing woman, as she saves a bunch of people in the wasteland, meeting a surprising character by the end of the issue.
What just happened to you, Zalvin?
Yeah, they meet a surprising character by the end of the issue, but I don't to say who it is.
Okay.
But it's a character from the world of the unknown universe who might talk like this in my head.
Yeah, sure.
Well, interesting. We're That's a big not fan. How I hear him.
We've read a lot of his issues and have been really impressed by his work.
It's Redcoat.
There we go. Thank you for spoiling it eventually. Yeah, cool cover. This continues to rock. We get the kind of glowing lady's perspective on things. We get to ride with her a little bit as she helps kids, kills monsters. This is great art, awesome action. This continues to be good. And, you know, and she has a moment where she was like, oh, yeah, there's like a dude like me. I wonder how he's doing.
Yeah, this is like very much a Punisher issue. If the Punisher wore like a one piece bathing suit, essentially,
a glowing one piece,
which he should.
Yeah,
the skull would fit right on the center.
He did. He did back in the swimsuit special, right? Like he wore that skull,
that weird belt.
Yep.
But I like this. The Redcoat reveal at the end. He seems mean. And I was like, I like nice Redcoat. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm curious if Geiger he's going Redcoat's to have
different. It does make me very curious because they're clearly heading towards a big confrontation between all these characters, presumably around like issue 25 of something or so. And like, what is the idea there? Like, what is the unknown war? Because it doesn't. Other than these characters meeting, it doesn't feel like plot lies. It's heading towards something. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, having Junkyard Joe in this comic hasn't really been a big thing. He's just sort of around. So I don't know what the big crossover is. The other thing I want to say is like, what's the deal with glowing woman and glowing man? Because is it going to be like a romance? Are they just buds? How does this work?
Yeah, I don't know. In a nuclear apocalyptic future, it's, you know, can love happen? We're going to find out.
Well, does Tariq, the glowing man, I don't know if they've delved into this as all in the book, does he have any sort of, like, issues with, like, a wife or something that might be holding him back from some sort of romance?
I think in the first, the lead up to Geiger, we saw his wife die, like, I want to say, 100 times. Yes. So I do think there's a hang up there.
Oh, really? Okay.
So like, his wife died as much as the Punisher's wife died, and that's been a much longer timeline.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them kissing, is my point.
I could see a kiss. Let me just say, like, Pete, if you were out there and you were like, I'm Pete Man, and you met someone named Pete Woman, wouldn't you sort of be like, I'm going to give it a shot?
Well, you know, you can't judge on names alone. You know what I mean?
It's really what about the
inside, inside the heart, you know?
She glows in the same way you glow.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean, you know, that you guys are destined to be together just because you glow.
She's covered. She has garbage plate, like, dripping down her front, just like you do right now.
She's covered in garbage plate.
Oh, I bet. Now you get me turned on. Stop it.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Wow, wow.
Let's wrap it up with Marvel Knights.
She could fold you into a flesh car.
Let's finish it up with Marvel Knights, the Punisher number 3 from Marvel, written by Jimmy Pabiati, art by Dan Pedosian. This takes place in the future set world of the world to come, where Punisher has gotten brainwashed and turned into El Zombie, an assassin working for a mob boss. And in this issue, he gets broken out in the most horrible way possible. Pete, I know you've been a little iffy about this series. Are you feeling any differently about this issue?
Yeah, this was really hard, man. This was like, first off, like, it's hard to see Zombie Punisher kind of like this mindless, because they pinch his cheeks, which is just such a thing that I didn't know would drive me insane until I'm like, oh man, you're just toying with him. You know, it's one thing to make somebody like kill somebody, but then to pinch his cheeks like that is just such a.
That's how I shake hands.
Oh, wow. That's really messed
up.
Is
that bad? You didn't like that?
Yeah, I don't think you should do that anymore. I think that's a horrible thing to do somebody.
Well, it did make your cheeks all nice and rosy when he went like that.
Oh, my God. What are you, a
grandmother?
So you
look good for stage.
That's right. For your beauty queen.
But yeah, then he tries to take his own life. And then I'm like, oh, that's why they did the suicide hotline advertising in the beginning of the comic. And then he's like, well, since that didn't work, I guess I'll kill everybody. And I'm like, oh, did we need that in between stage? Because Punisher's known for revenge. I feel like maybe he didn't have to kill himself to get there, but I'm not writing comics. I want to enjoy this, and I'm working really hard to try to enjoy it, but it feels like every time I try to get somewhere, the comic's like, fuck you, man. We're doing more fucked up shit, so I don't know.
Pete, you've already been reached out to once by Jimmy Palmiotti about the Punisher in the last couple weeks.
So, and I feel awful. I don't want to let anybody down. I want to love comics.
We are reviewing things impartially on our comic book show. We will not be swayed by people dropping into our comics. Jimmy Palmiotti, for example, I love you.
Yeah. And let me say,
it seems
like
you were swayed. It seemed like you were swayed.
No. That was completely impartial.
Unrelated, Pete.
Jimmy, I love you.
Yeah, I love your work. Well, let me say, and honestly, and it's going to sound like pandering, I really do like this.
Yeah,
I think this is great.
Like this as well.
I think that I'm the number one Punisher fan on this.
Wow, I guess so. Congratulations.
No, here's the thing that, like,
hey, I can't wait to take the Punisher quiz, and I'm going to send you the throne, the Punisher shrine that is now going to be shipped.
What really struck me with this, because we've had innumerable conversations over the years about the Punisher and how, like, I'm always kind of iffy about Punisher, but there have been some fantastic runs on Punisher, is I like the runs that deconstruct him in some way. I think the ones you like, Pete, are the ones where he is the Punisher and he's pushing through with being the Punisher. I like the ones that break him down and break him apart so that he can come back. Because frankly, like this issue, seeing him...
Frankly?
Yes. I thought the scene where he tries to die by suicide, but where he realizes, like, I killed children, I killed families,
innocent.
And he's like, I have no choice, I have to kill myself, to then turn around and be like, you know what, fine, I'm going to kill all of these motherfuckers. Like, that's very satisfying at the end there, and adding in Dan Pedosian's horrific half his face gone design is very cool as well.
Yes, I agree. The Dan Panosian art is excellent. And yes, like taking Punisher and putting him through hell are my favorite. Like, that's what Garth Ennis did to the Punisher. And like, it was about like giving him justification for, you know, being such a killer and still being a quote unquote hero, or at least protagonist of the story. And I think you have to do that to justify whatever he's about to do, whatever horrifying things he's about to do in the next issue. And I think they did a good job of it. And I like that we are two characters of these spies that don't really know each other and all that. Like, I think that's actually fun. It's a nice tonal shift from just pure horrifying violence that we get in this issue, setting up for the absolute bloodbath that is going to happen next issue.
So, you know, hearing you guys talk about it, yeah, because I was like, oh my God, this is insane. But it is this kind of moment of like, he became the Punisher to stop the killing of innocent families and children. So the fact that like he kind of woke up and was told, hey, you've been a zombie and you've killed family, like, the fact that it had such a toll on him, like, makes sense. I was just kind of in kind of shock of all the craziness that was going down. You know, I do think that where he is like really badass and cool. And I can't wait to see what happens next. But yeah, I was just kind of in a little bit of like, holy shit, what is all going down? You know?
Well, and like, I feel like you look at the Punisher like a son. Like, you're the father, and okay, he's your son. And so, like, you
want, I was thinking the other way around, but all right, cool. Yeah, you know what I mean?
And they say that
if the Punisher is your dad, that's a bad position to be in, Pete. I don't know if you know what happens to his kids.
it's not great. Yeah. There's one mob situation. But let's remember that everyone has... I love
picnics. What are you guys talking about?
Is it weird that Punisher doesn't chain Daredevil to a picnic and is like, you're one bad picnic away from being me? That would be like much more specific and make a lot more sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Really, well, I think he should really actually want Daredevil to get married and have children. He should be pushing him through that to really show him what it's like to be
him. Then take him on a picnic and then kill them and be like, now you see.
Now one thing I did was like, will kill now.
That you guys commented on the art and the kind of like last couple of panels are really badass.
Just be careful, Pete, because they say that every man has one Punisher sperm out there, and you just got to be careful.
Every man has one. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like a bullet.
Yeah, most of them are turtle and rat sperm, but there's one Punisher sperm in there.
Oh man,
somewhere. So you be careful.
It's a real wild card.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. For the snack, support our podcast at all the podcasts we do.
That's it. I'm out of steam.
Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm calling my flesh Uber, or my flesh car will come take me to my my flesh party. Of the fail.